WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. If you haven't paid attention to this yet, next Tuesday is Congressional Primary Day in New York State, and there are some interesting and important races in some local congressional districts. There are two primary days in New York State. The one next Tuesday is only for congressional seats. The one that you've probably been hearing about more is the one for governor nominations and other New York State offices. That's not coming up until September. So if you want to vote in primaries that matter in New York State this year, you have to vote twice. Cynthia Nixon versus Governor Cuomo, for example, that's in September. But there are several congressional seats that are up for, of course, not election, but nomination. These are primaries within the parties that are pretty important and show the divides within the Democratic Party and within the Republican Party as they are getting expressed in our area. So we're going to go down a couple of the most contentious of these races, the ones where the outcome actually might be in doubt, with Mara Gay, New York Times editorial board member, and John O'Connor, WNYC's Washington correspondent, covering the New York and New Jersey congressional delegations. Hi, John and Mara. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
So, Mara, let's start with you. And since we were just talking to a congresswoman from Queens, one of the most important of these primaries is in Queens, and it involves one of the incumbents who's a big leader in the Democratic Party in the House, Democrat Joe Crowley, who some people say might even be the next Speaker if the Democrats take the majority in the House and Nancy Pelosi isn't. So can you set up this race for us?
Sure. So you have Congressman Joe Crowley. He is a 10-term Democratic incumbent. He's a big name in New York politics because he also happens to be the party leader of the Queens Democrats, which is just an incredibly powerful role. He played a role in electing City Council Speaker Cory Johnson, for example. And, you know, he is getting his first primary challenge, significant primary challenge in a long time from a young former Bernie Sanders organizer by the name of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And ultimately, there hasn't, you know, we haven't seen much public polling in any of these races, but I can say that despite Congressman Crowley's heavy advantages, those who, you know, work on these campaigns and have who are close to his campaign, there are concerns. I mean, I think there's a sense that there's a lot of energy in the left wing of the Democratic Party. And even though there aren't that many policy differences between the two of them, Ocasio-Cortez is setting herself up as a grassroots alternative, and she's picking up a lot of ground.
So, John, can you put this in national context for us? Is this a case of something that we're seeing around the country this year, which is people from identifying themselves as from a more progressive wing of the Democratic Party challenging incumbents who they see as from a more establishment wing?
Yeah, absolutely. That's clearly a trend running throughout the country. There's kind of two veins of it. One is, and that you're seeing both of them in New York City. One is this idea that someone like Crowley, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, makes the argument that he's too connected to Wall Street money, too connected to real estate money, to corporate interests, and that she more closely represents where the Democratic Party is and where it's moving towards the progressive wing of the party. The second argument is that some of these folks have been in power for too long and have kind of lost touch or aren't as motivated to work on behalf of their constituents. And you're seeing that in some of the other races in New York City. It's not exactly what happened with the Tea Party in 2010 and 2014 midterms, but it is a similar kind of movement where the party out of power in the White House and in Congress, there has a strong, motivated electorate that would like to move the party to the left because they think that's the way to win more elections.
So let me play a clip from a debate on New York One last week between Crowley and Ocasio-Cortez. This is a one-minute clip that goes to exactly what you were just talking about, John, and that is the role of big money in the Democratic Party, particularly in this case, as Cortez says when she speaks first, political action committees or PACs.
PACs are really the real problem. About 99% of my opponents' donations come from corporations, big money, and lobbyist groups. Mm-hmm. And 80% of all of my donations to my campaign are less than $200.
That just isn't true. The people of this district know me. They know my work ethic. They know where my heart lies. And that's why they've sent me back to Congress again and again, and I believe they will again, because of what we're threatened with right now. And what we need right now is experience, and someone who can be a champion and a proven leader in Washington. I'm a proven leader. I'm in the House Democratic leadership. I'm poised at this point in time to take on this president, and I've been doing that, just like I did this week when I marched in protest against what's happening at our nation's border. It is antithetical to everything that I believe in, and that's what I fight for every day.
And you know what? If this organization is as fascist as you have called it,
I've said it's fascist,
and you have said it's fascist, then why don't you adopt the stance to eliminate it? This is a moral problem.
So, Mara Gay from The Times, does that clip illuminate something in particular for you that's a dynamic in this race?
You know, honestly, I'm not actually sure that it does. I mean, I think you guys are absolutely right. There is some energy toward pushing the party to the left. I'm not really sure that Democrats have quite found their messaging. And I think they're looking for their messaging. And I think that they are very focused on, winning these primaries. But they're going to have to hone their message before November. And, this is kind of small potatoes compared to that struggle that we're going to see play out in seats that are, kind of up for grabs with both Democrats and Republicans across the country. We're talking here about extremely safe Democratic seats. But I think actually there's a lot of space still for Democrats to hone their message, and they haven't quite found what it is.
I did see the editorial in the Times today, and you're a member of the editorial board that ripped into Crowley for his non-appearance at a debate that the community newspaper, the Park Chester Times, was holding. Obviously, as we could tell from that clip, he did participate in the New York One debate. What's the issue as you see it?
Sure. So there have been three debates in the 14th District in Queens and the Bronx so far, and Congressman Crowley has appeared at one of them. The other day, instead of going to a debate to face Ocasio-Cortez, the congressman chose to go to a monthly civic association meeting elsewhere in the district. That seemed to be his priority. We don't think that that's the right priority. We think that, it's important that members of Congress take their case and candidates take their case to the voters. And I think there's a certain... I think it's very easy when you're in office for a long time and when you're performing well in a primary, it can be very easy to skip some of these debates. I mean, he's certainly not the first incumbent to have done this. But I think, frankly, just out of respect to the democratic process, the voters, and your candidate, it's really important to fight for every vote.
Listeners, if you're just joining us, we're previewing next Tuesday's New York State congressional primaries. We're talking about four races on the Democratic side and one on the Republican side, all within New York City, where challengers are trying to mount serious challenges to incumbents And we're doing that with Mara Gay from the New York Times editorial board and WNYC congressional correspondent John O'Connor, who covers the New York and New Jersey delegations. And let's go on to another race. John, judging by fundraising, Carolyn Maloney, Democrat from the east side of Manhattan and parts of Queens, could be facing a serious challenge from Suraj Patel. Tell us about that race and where their money is coming from.
Yeah, Maloney, longtime member. She served since 1993, represents parts of Manhattan, has facing a challenge here. Second time in a couple of cycles where she's faced a well-funded challenger. This is not something brand new for her, although it is unusual. She's facing Suraj Patel, a businessman who's raised $1.2 million to challenge her. Maloney has raised $1.6 million in her effort for re-election. So there's a lot of money going on here, especially for a primary. As sitting member of Congress, she's on the Financial Services Committee. A lot of her money comes from, a significant amount comes from PACs and things like that, from financial interests in New York City, folks that she represents as a member of Congress. So, this is a significant race. They are definitely taking it seriously and are, not taking the challenge lightly.
And I want to go on to the next race, which drew a surprise endorsement from your editorial board, Mara, in the case of incumbent Yvette Clark running for renomination from Central Brooklyn. The Times has endorsed the challenger, saying Yvette Clark just hasn't done very much. Tell us about the challenger, including how to pronounce his name.
I might not get it right myself, but Adam Bunkadeko is the challenger in Central Brooklyn. He's up against a longtime incumbent, Yvette Clark, and the congresswoman has been there for quite a long time, but doesn't have a very robust legislative record. And Adam has been high energy. He's incredibly smart. He's a community organizer who has been working with families in poverty. He's organized and helped run campaigns for the Democratic Party as far away as Arkansas. He had a short stint in finance, and then he quickly turned back to community organizing, which seems to be where his heart lies. And his message is actually very clear, and I think quite important for that district and for New York City, which is that that is a seat that should be used to especially help to ease the city's affordable housing crisis. And he has some very novel ideas about how to do that, including trying to get funding to build more Mitchell Lama-style housing in Crown Heights and Central Brooklyn. And we just find that kind of big thinking refreshing. He's been working pretty hard beating the streets, so who knows what will happen. But it's exciting to see that kind of energy being taken to the voters.
And it was surprising to some people to see the Times endorsement. Do you expect your editorial board to take a position before Election Day next Tuesday in any of these other more seriously contested races, like you criticized Congressman Crowley today, but you didn't endorse his opponent? There's also Suraj Patel versus Carolyn Maloney and Elliot Engel, and being challenged by Jonathan Lewis in the Bronx.
Yeah, I think that we are probably about done. There's always a chance that we could weigh in further. We were especially moved to weigh in to the race for in Yvette Clark's district, just because we were not only impressed by her challenger, but also felt that seat needed a more active member of Congress. I'll leave it there.
Let me go to the Republican side. And John, in really New York City's only Republican-controlled House District, District 11, which covers Staten Island and a little bit of South Brooklyn. We have two candidates who I think it's fair to say are competing to position themselves as most in line with President Trump. The incumbent, Congressman Dan Donovan, who has received the president's endorsement on Twitter. His opponent, Michael Grimm, is trying to make a comeback in the district. As some of our listeners know, certainly if you live in that district, he held that seat before pleading guilty to tax evasion and then spent 8 months in federal prison after resigning in early 2015. But Congressman Grimm is trying to make a comeback, and from all reports, he's making a serious go of it. So what's the Trump dynamic here? Is that what Staten Island has come to for the Republican? It's who can be more like Trump?
Yeah, if you listen to what the candidates are saying, that's clearly must be the case, because that's the argument that they're making. They have both argued that they will more closely align themselves with the president, with his policies, vote with him when he needs their vote. And because of that, that they are therefore standing up for and representing, the little guy who lives in Staten Island, who, was motivated by the president's election and candidacy last fall. Grimm has a few parallels there with the, he's argued that the tax evasion charge was a politically motivated prosecution, which is something that we've heard from the president as well. Donovan can actually boast of an endorsement from the president and tweeted out a photo of the two of them on Air Force One. They are both making a strong play to most closely align themselves with the president.
Why is Trump popular in that district? Mara, have you looked into this, or should I stick with John on this one?
Actually, I've spent quite a lot of time on Staten Island when I was at the Wall Street Journal as a city hall reporter and a congressional reporter covering the New York delegation. I covered Michael Grimm twice, both of his elections, and Dan Donovan's election. That is a very different district. The district has become more conservative, even than it used to be. It's interesting because technically there are more registered Democrats on Staten Island than Republicans. The district went for Barack Obama in 2008, again for Barack Obama narrowly in 2012, but then, quite decisively for President Trump. And, that district has gone so far to the right at this point that I think that Michael Grimm and Dan Donovan are a reflection of that. I mean, you have to remember, these are two men, two former and current members of Congress, who actually are fairly moderate Republicans, or were moderate Republicans. And when, those who know them personally will describe them that way, or would have in the past. And to see the two of them, I'm not speaking actually for the board in this mm-hmm. moment here. I'm, mm-hmm. I'm speaking for myself, mm-hmm. And I know both of them personally. Mm-hmm. But to see the two of them kind of out-Trump one another, and then leading ultimately to yesterday, where we had both of the candidates come out and refuse to condemn the family separation policy on the border. We had even Michael Grimm saying something to the effect of, anybody who has been in a nursery knows that kids cry, so that this is no different. I think it's been incredibly demoralizing, depressing, and I really hope that better angels prevail on Staten Island and demand more out of their candidates, but also themselves.
I heard that Grimm even described whatever facilities he was referring to near the border, or even in New York. Now we know from New York One's reporting that they're taking kids from down there and housing them even up here after those separations. He described it as like dropping your kids off at daycare, I've heard. Can you confirm that? And we know on Fox last night, Laura Ingraham said, oh, it's like summer camp. And then she had to retract that when there was a lot of pushback, even among Fox viewers. So did Grimm really say that? It's like dropping them off at daycare?
He did use similar language. He did. And again, I have spent a lot of time on Staten Island, and I just don't believe that the people there, that's a very family heavy borough. I just don't believe that this is what they really believe in. I think, unfortunately, It's in a reflection of the rest of the country. Things have become, in some ways, so tribal and tribalized that people aren't really thinking with their heart or their head at all. They're kind of reacting to, well, I'm in this camp, and so I'm not going to actually be a critical thinker. But I really hope that wiser heads and hearts prevail.
And did Dan Donovan respond sharply to that, or is he trying not to look too different from Trump and not taking too different a stand?
It's more the latter. I mean, Dan Donovan is not known for bombastic language, so he was a little bit less bombastic about it. But neither candidate is willing to place the blame where it belongs, which is with the White House and that policy change. And, you know, the blaming of Democrats, the blaming of family members, it's extremely demoralizing. And if that's truly where Staten Island is, then, you know, there are problems beyond this congressional primary.
Brian Donovan actually echoed the White House's language on this issue in saying that he said nobody wants to see families separated, but this problem won't be solved unless both sides come to the table to implement meaningful immigration reform, which is something the White House has been arguing that both this is a problem for Republicans and Democrats to solve, whereas critics say this is something the president himself can end.
Mara Gay from the New York Times editorial board, I know you got to go. Thank you so much for giving us some time today.
Thanks for having me.
And WNYC congressional correspondent John O'Connor, I'm going to keep you for one more question because there's one more district that I just want to make sure we mention and say out loud. It's in the fringes of our listening area up in the Hudson Valley, Hudson, New York, and around there. It's a geographically large district, District 19, where Republican John Faso is the incumbent. There's a Democratic primary that features seven candidates. So we can't do the kind of one-on-one comparison that we've been doing with the other races that we've been talking about today. But can you give us the basic dynamics there? And we'll just say to people in that district, if you're a registered district in that Hudson Valley, a registered Democrat in that Hudson Valley district, you have a race that you should get familiar with the candidates in. And John, what are the basics?
Yeah, I recently spent several days there doing some reporting. You've got seven candidates. They range across the Democratic spectrum from, you know, a very progressive kind of in your face Bernie Sanders type by the name of Jeff Beals, all the way to kind of more moderate Democrats, Antonio Delgado, who's a New York City lawyer, formerly a New York City lawyer, and Pat Ryan, a West Point grad. The overriding feeling among voters I talked to was they want to win in November. They're happy with the candidates' positions on issues. There is a debate among the candidates on how far to go for Medicare for all, for instance, or having a public option for more universal coverage. There's some energy policy differences, but the voters are happy with what they're hearing. They want a candidate who can win in the fall, and to do that, this district is about one third registered Democrat, one third registered Republican, and one third no party registration. And so the Democrats there recognize that the candidate is going to have some appeal to other voters who aren't Democrats. So you're not seeing as much of the civil war that you've seen in some other Democratic primaries where the voters are pulling these candidates to the left during the primary because they are thinking long term towards November and kind of how to win the district.
All right. Primary day in New York State for congressional seats within your party. If you're a registered Republican, registered Democrat, make sure you know if there's a primary in your district and turn out to vote for nominations for Congress next Tuesday in New York State. WNYC congressional reporter John O'Connor, thanks a lot.
Thank you.